Following the well digging, Father Isaac leaves the valley or gorge of Gror, and he moves into a better-known city, Be'er Sheva. This is a city that Avraham Avinu, that his father and mother had lived in as well, and Yitzchak Avinu, our father Isaac, and our mother Rivka, Rebecca, settled there. And an amazing thing happens. Despite the fact that they had so much animosity for Yitzchak, and despite the fact that they were so jealous of him, as Yitzchak stayed the course and was not fazed, eventually his enemies came around to recognize his qualities and the fact that Hashem was with him and that he was a continuation of everything that his father stood for, and they sued for peace. Not out of weakness, not out of compromising his position, Yitzchak maintains his integrity, and in the end, his enemies come forward and they want to strike a deal, a covenant, a Brit, as it were. And so there's this peace treaty that's struck, and they go off to their way. And today's class is going to pick up with the next little narrative, and that is the marriage of Esau. Now remember that Yitzchak has this great love for Esau. He sees the tremendous potential that Esau is endowed with, and he's trying desperately to reveal it. So after the Torah tells us about the well and the oath or covenant that was struck, and they called this place Sheva because there was a Shavua, because there was an oath that was made there, and because they had made this deal, the Torah turns its attention towards Esau, chapter 27, verse 34. This is near the end of the fifth reading of Parshas Toldos. Vayhi Esav ben arboim shon. So the Torah says, behold, Esav was now 40 years old. Vayikach isha. He took a wife. Who is this wife? What's her name? Yehudis. Sounds very Jewish. Not so Jewish. Bas Be'eri Hachiti. She is Yehudis, the daughter of Be'eri Hachiti. And he takes a second wife. This wife sounds very sweet, very aromatic, but she really wasn't so. Her name was Basmas, the spice girl. And she was Bas Elon Hachiti, the daughter of Elon the Chiti. So two Chittite families, and Yitzchak had married. Let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi seems to see tremendous importance in this idea that the Torah introduces Esau's marriage by first telling you how old Esau was. Like that's how the pasuk begins. Vayhi Esav ben arboim shana. Esav was 40 years old, and vayikach isha. Says Rashi, what difference does that make? And why is there such an emphasis on Esau's age before we talk of his marriage? And why did Esau wait till he was 40? The last we know of Esau, he wasn't exactly a celibate fellow. So Rashi says, Esav hoya nimshal lechazer. Esav assumed a piggish posture, which means he would present himself as being kosher, as being suitable, but that wasn't really the case. And how do we know that Esav assumed that kind of posture? Shenemar, because it is stated in the 80th Psalm of the Book of Tehillim, Yecharsimenu Chazir Miyar, which literally means that the pig, the hog, is he cuts down leaves from the thicket or from the foliage, which actually refers to a vineyard, as it were, there. Talk about leaves of a vineyard. And this is actually a mashal, a metaphor for Amalek, the grandson of Esav. The vineyard or the vine is a metaphor for the Jewish people. And Amalek is the evil force that cuts off branches or leaves and foliage from the vineyard of Israel, from the vine. So we have this idea of Yicharsimenu Chazer. There could be all kinds of animals, all kinds of wild animals, all kind of uncouth, unbridled, uncontrolled animals that would tear leaves from the vine. Why Yicharsimenu Chazer? And the explanation that our sages give is HaChazer HaZeh, that this Chazer, this pig, Shehu Sheichev, when the pig lies, Peshet Kalafav, the pig invariably kind of displays his hooves as if to say, as if to announce or promote, Loimar, Ru'u, see, Sha'ani, Tahor, that I am a kosher animal. We know that kosher animals have to have cloven hooves and they have to chew their cud. The pig does not chew his cud, but he has cloven hooves. So the pig's posture as if demonstrate, I'm kosher. And he sits there displaying his hooves for all to see. And incidentally, this is why the pig has become the paradigm of non-kosher food. Even though in theory, the pig is no less kosher than the horse or the dromedary, he's no less kosher than a donkey or a dog. But the pig, people say, well, I don't eat pork. I wouldn't eat a pig. Why? Because the most dangerous non-kosher is the non-kosher that actually looks kosher. That's much worse than that which is clearly not kosher. It's clearly not kosher. It's off limits. It's understood that this is not something for us. But something that looks kind of benign, it seems appropriate, but really it isn't, is a much greater danger. And this was Esav. Kach elu alufei Esav. These are the descendants of Esav. These are the chieftains that came from Esav. Geuzlin, v'chaimsim. These are people who behaved in the most immoral fashion. Taking advantage, abusing, stealing, and every turn, but demonstrating or showing themselves to be kosher or suitable. And going back now to Esav, because we kind of talked about Esav's children, but Esav's children had to get it from somewhere. This is the way Esav established his family and the nation that he spawned. But going back to Esav, kol arbayim shana, for 40 years, Esav tzad nashim. Esav was either sweet-talking woman or downright raping them. And this was mitachas baleim. He didn't go for single woman. He went all the way. When he was going to have fun, he looked for married woman to engage with. This was a real adulterer. And he would ma'anais him. He would abuse woman. But kishahaya ben mem, when he was 40 years old, then he said, Omar, he said, Abba ben mem shana nasa. My father was 40 years old when he got married, nasa isha. Afani kain, I too should get married at the age of 40. I should try to emulate my father. So when the Torah introduces you to Esav's age, before it tells you that Esav married, the Torah is trying to convey to you the Esavite methodology. He went to the original school of Hogwarts. Esav was a big bluffer. It was all a fake. He made himself as if he was kosher. He acted as if he was a fine, upright citizen, a son of Yitzchak and Rivka. But in fact, anything but that was the case. And he marries these women. Now, these women learned very quickly to adopt Esav's methodologies. Yehudis, his name was not Yehudis. Yehudis is a beautiful Jewish name. It means to be dedicated to Hashem. The idea of Yehuda means actually to be acknowledged only God and to in a sense, reject idolatry. She was anything but that. She was a master idolater, but she called herself Yehudis. This was a nom de guerre. She introduced herself to her future father-in-law and mother-in-law as Yehudis, sweetly saying that she had embraced the ways of the Jewish people, that she was so impressed and in awe of the notion that the Jewish people only believed in one God, and so on and so forth. Now, when it says that she was bas, Yehudis bas be'eri hachiti, so be'eri was known, Mahram of Rottenberg says, as we see in the prophet Hosea, was known for a family whose women were ra'is v'zoynus, bad woman and promiscuous woman. So she was bas be'eri, either her father's name was be'eri, or be'eri was the family kind of moxie. These were bad women, a promiscuous woman, and that's why Esav married. Now here is the interesting question. If Esav was the ultimate master of deception, and if he was busy cloaking himself in a garb of righteousness, pretending that he was Yitzchak's son, getting married at the age of 40. True, Yitzchak had married at the age of 40, but to whom did Yitzchak marry? To Rivka. Where did Rivka live? He didn't fall in love with the girl next door. She was a 17-day journey away in the home of Avraham Avinu. And ultimately, that's what Yaakov does. Yaakov goes back to the family of Lavan. And Rachel and Leah, the daughters of Lavan. So if Esav was such a master of deception, why didn't he do the same thing? Surely he would have thought of that. So the Sefarno says, Yitzchak was not particular in that fashion. That was Avram's thing. He said, Yitzchak wasn't particular. He said to Esav, whomever you marry, just make sure that she has good values and that she has the right virtues and that she buys into this whole Jewish idea and she's committed. Esav, yes, of course, Dad, sure, no problem. Yeah, no problem. Of course, I'll get you some. I'll get a wonderful woman, Dad. And he did what he did, because Esav was Esav. Now, there are other ways of looking at this. And one way is, as the Ibn Ezra says, Esav was ready to play this game to a point. He said, I don't care to wait till 40 to get married. I'm having my fun anyway. He says, but I'm not traveling to some distant place. I need to know who I'm marrying. What if I really get a righteous woman? That'll be problems, you know, okay? We're not going to get along. He says, I need to make sure that this is a woman I can live with. She's my speed. Where, what? I'll do the calling. 40 years old, no problem. I can do the age. I can make it look right. But there's no way that I'm going to play that game. There's no way that I'm going to go just somewhere out into the wild blue yonder and find some woman. What if she's not like, you know, what Esau wants? So the deception, you know, had a limit. At any rate, that's who he married. And later on in the Torah, we're going to find the real names of these people, that both of these women disguised themselves with fake names. Yehudis is a fake name. That sounds very Jewish. Basmas, once again, is a name. Sounds like the aromatic spices of the Havdalah, but it was anything but. And that wasn't her real name either. So what happened? How did this go? How did Esav's cloak and dagger mission go? His lying, his cheating, his deception. Did he fool Yitzchak and Rivka? Well, not really. You know, as Barnum and Bailey said, you can fool all the people some of the time. You can fool some of the people all the time, but you're not going to fool Yitzchak and Rivka, and especially because Esav wasn't really ready to play this game for that long. He went through the motions. I'll be 40 years old. But Esav was Esav. And his wives were his wives. And so, verse 35 says, Vatihiena moiras ruach li Yitzchak l'Rivka. They were a source of tremendous angst, and they embittered the lives of Yitzchak and Rivka. Moiras ruach, what does this mean? Let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi says, Lashoin hamroas ruach. Hamroas ruach means one disturbing the spirit of Yitzchak and Rivka. Or of rebellious spirit. Kimoi, for example, we find later on in the book of Deuteronomy, Mamrim heyisem. Moshe Rabbeinu criticizes the Jewish people. He says, you were rebellious with God from day one. You always were rebellious. And so here we have the same idea of rebelliousness being alluded to. Kol ma'aseim hoyolahachis. Everything they did. They didn't just do their own thing. And if it gets on your nerves, sorry, but we have to live our life. They did it to spite Yitzchak and Rivka. And it drove them crazy. It was Yitzchak and Rivka, was lahaches liyitzavin, it was to spite them, and it was to bring them grief. And liyitzchak ulirivka, that they were together in a state of grief over Esav's wives. What's the one thing that could unite them? They disagreed about the future of the Jewish people. Esau was beloved by Yitzchak, and Yitzchak saw in him a tremendous potential, and he continued to work on trying to get through to him. Conversely, Rivka thought that Esav was a waste of time. Obviously, she loved her children, didn't want them to die, but she knew that the future of the Jewish people, Nachas, Yiddish Nachas, is not going to come from Esav. It's going to come from Yaakov. But one thing both Yitzchak and Rivka could agree on, that was that idolatry is horrible. It was terrible. And it bothered them so much. And so when it says, Li'itzav and Li'itzchak Ule Rivka, this is because Rashi says, Shehoyu Oivdeis Aveda Zorah, because these women were actually worshiping idols. And that's something that equally pained and perturbed both Yitzchak and Rivka, embittering their lives and their spirit. The Emek Dover interestingly asked the question, why doesn't it say Li Yitzchak v'Rivka? Why Ule Rivka? An extra lamed. And he says, because the truth is that Yitzchak and Rivka were not embittered in the same fashion. It's true that the idolatry bothered both of them, but when you look at Esav differently, invariably the idolatry will bother you more or less. So Yitzchak, who loved Esau, he was bothered in one way. Maybe in some ways bothered more than Rivka, because he had always dreamed that Esau would rise and become the child he always hoped he would be. And then he saw these wives of his and worshiping idols, and he realized, I don't know how this is going to happen. So maybe that's why it bothered him more. Or maybe, on the other hand, Yitzchak was able to overlook more because of his love for Yitzchak, and love blinds. But either way, the Emek Dover says, Yitzchak uli Rivka, they were both bothered. They were both embittered, but not exactly in the same way. They reacted differently. Hatzad hashava shebeneim, the common denominator was that both of them really, really detested the ways of Esau's wives. So that's the story of Esau. That's the story of his wife and his wives. And very interestingly, from this point, we're going to now turn towards the blessings, where despite all of this, Yitzchak will still feel that if only he would bless Esau and empower him, if only he would give him the rights to be able to carry forth and build a Jewish people, somehow Esau would still rebound and he would become the child he was always destined to be. So Yitzchak still didn't give up hope, despite all of this. So let's talk about Esau. Let's talk about piggish posture. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about Esau in his Hogwarts. Page Shin Mem Vav. This is the 26th entry in the Beauty of Chumash from Parshas Toldos. Chavav. So you all remember what Rashi said, right? This is the business of Esau, who was behaving in the most promiscuous of fashions, in the most adulterous of fashions, but nonetheless pretended as if he was very, very high-minded morality, and he was going to follow the ways of his father. Father got married at 40. I'll marry at 40. Wouldn't do any hanky-panky, you know, so I'm very, very straight-laced kind of fellow.
Sorry, Rabbi, so his children were not Jewish.
Esau's children were not Jewish. That is correct. Their mothers were not Jewish. And they were raised with by idolaters. No, Esau's children are definitely not Jewish. Amalek is a grandchildren. Not only weren't Jewish, they weren't even legitimate. The vast majority of Esau's progeny was basically the result of incest and adultery and wife swapping. Was pretty terrible stuff. So the Rebbe introduces us to a maimer of the Alter Rebbe. There's a book, a slender book, which is called Maimari Admor HaZaken HaKtzorim, short maimorim from the Alter Rebbe, short explanations according to Chassidus of various different issues, you know, across the strata of Torah literature. So there's this maimer of the Alter Rebbe in the Maimorim HaKtzorim that says sheyeshna hevdel, that there is a difference between birure v'zichuche shel Esav al yedei Yankev lebirure v'zichuche shel Lavan. Birure and zichuch means, in simple terminology, an act of refinement. So just like gasoline that comes out of the ground has to be refined, you cannot take gas, oil, out of the ground and put it in a car unless you want to destroy the car, because it's filled with toxins that will clog the engine and the car will die, and you'll never be able to bring it back to life. So if you want to use gasoline coming from the ground, what do you need to do? You need to refine it. And the more refined the gasoline is, the better it'll work. So if you want your car to last longer, what should you buy? More expensive gasoline. It's actually a question of being penny wise or pound foolish. So you bought 87, but your car is eventually going to break down because there's still sediment and toxins. Buy 91, it's cleaner gas, and therefore there's less sediment and toxins, the car has a better chance of lasting. Of course, many people lease their vehicles, so why would they bother wasting more money? They don't care. But if you own your vehicle, it's probably a good idea to use 91, not 87, because a higher level of refinement. That's the meaning of refinement. Another example of refinement is when people use various grains. So once upon a time, people used the chaff along with the flour. Why? Because they couldn't afford to get rid of the chaff. They needed to use both the chaff and the flour mixed together. That way they would get two loaves of bread instead of one loaf of bread. We live in a time of such opulence and plenty that almost nobody is interested in doing that. Instead, they want fine white flour, which means it's refined. All of the non-gluten agents are removed. All of that which is the non-leavening agents are removed. And you have what's called very fine flour. What's the problem with fine flour? It's actually not so good for you. It's actually not good for you. So we found out that it's better to leave the other things in the flour. And that's where the comeback of whole wheat flour and so on and so forth. But that would be an act of refinement. So how would you, they're very different kinds of refinement. If you refine gasoline, it happens through burning off toxins. If you refine flour, it happens through? Removal, putting it in a sieve. And then that's how you're able to pick out the good from the bad, the toxins from the desirable. I'll give you one more example of refinement, and that is when precious metals come out of the ground, they don't gleam and sparkle. When gold comes out of the ground, it's black. And it's filled with all kinds of sediment. And there's something called a crucible, which is a container in which extraordinary heats are entertained and toxins are burned off or they dissipate. And then what's left in the end is gold or nickel or silver or zinc, whatever else it might be. So it is also, my dear friends, God created all things, good mixed with bad. Everything has got toxins in it. So life is about one big journey of refinement. Our own character has good qualities and very bad qualities. And we're supposed to take the time to refine ourselves, which means we pick out the negative qualities that we're naturally endowed with, and we develop and highlight the positive qualities that Hashem gave us. And hopefully we become a mensch. Right? The Western world says, I'm just human. We say, become a human. Becoming a human means, a mensch means, be in the image of God, and you should perfect your behavior, your attitude, your talents, your abilities, your faculties, your wherewithal, etc. Esau was a very flawed figure. He had an enormous amount of toxin. He also had lots of good. The problem was that he was overwhelmed by the toxin. In the end, the toxins were choking. And Esau's, all his good became overwhelmed by the negative, and his good was lost. Yaakov also had issues, but Yaakov's issues went the other way. And Yaakov not only refined himself, learning how not to be a goody-two-shoes, learning how to find the courage and stamina and strength to fight for that which was right and good, to have the koyach, to have the inner fortitude to do what was necessary and take the path of greater resistance. That was an act of refinement for Yaakov. That's not who he was naturally. He was Ishtam, Yeshiva Halim. He was just a bookworm. He liked to learn Torah. Avraham was delighted with his grandsons. Beautiful little boy. But this boy wasn't going to go anywhere. So he had his refinement, if you will. But Esau's refinement, so then when Yaakov is finished refining himself, guess what else he has to do? When he calibrates his own abilities, his job then is to refine others. Who does Yaakov contend with? Who does he lock horns with? Esav and Lavan. These are the two dark people in his life. His brother and his father-in-law. Very close to him. Brother and father-in-law. So the Alter Rebbe says that there's a difference between the Birur and Zichuch of Esav through Yaakov to the Birur and Zichuch of Lavan. Lavan hayaramai. Lavan was a cheater, a liar, a master of deceit. Yaakov had to figure out what was toxins and what wasn't, what was good and what was bad. It wasn't simple. With Lavan, you never knew what you were getting. It was always a confused bill of goods or an orchestrated bill of goods. Therefore, Yaakov, until he finally managed to get or extricate what he had to from Lavan, it took a long time. It doesn't mean he elevated Lavan, but he had to extricate sparks or be able to extrapolate these different forces of holiness that were stuck within Lavan's persona and reality, and that took time because Lavan was so dishonest and you never knew what you were dealing with. Esav lomazeis, Alter Rebbe says, Esav was, no, very different. Heres kavana hara begoli. Esav, there was no deception. He was very straight with Yaakov. Yaakov said, Esav, what do you want? Esav said, to kill you. I want to get rid of you. Yaakov said, really? Just like that? Esav said, oh yeah, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to get rid of you. Then I'll be happy. So that was like a little easier. V'lachein nitzacheis Yaakov b'teches man kotze. Therefore Yaakov had this confrontation. He dealt with it and he got it done with. Because he knew what he was dealing with. When you know what you're dealing with, it's much easier than when you're dealing with something that you don't know what you're dealing with. And this is a story, ultimately, of Esau and Lavan. And based on this, Alter Rebbe explains why the present Galut has been dragging and dragging and dragging for over 1,950 years already. Because the Galus is also an Eifen Shahara Hu Nister. In today's Galus, it's not open. Our enemies make believe they're our friends. Linda Sarsour, Yimach Shemo, she's busy raising money for Jews from Pittsburgh who were massacred. It's crazy stuff. Your enemy who wants to kill you claims that he loves you. We're not anti-Semitic, we're anti-Zionist. We love Jews, we just don't like the occupation, quote unquote. The early generations, their sins were overt and clear. So then the end of Golus was near, it was easy to see. In our time, that the sin is not revealed, the end is not near. So this is, what does this mean? It says that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of adultery, because of murder, terrible things. Second Beis HaMikdash because of wanton hatred. We didn't like each other for no reason. Okay, so that's pretty open. Well, it's really not open. You see, most people who are in some kind of fight will give you all the justification in the world. Say, it's not sin as chinam. I dislike this person. But believe me, it's not for nothing. I have my reasons. I can tell you why I dislike them. And the reasons sound good. But what's really behind this? Is it sin as chinam? Is it just empty hatred? Or is there actually a good reason for it? It's not clear. This is our problem. It's our problem. When you know what you're doing wrong, it's easy to fix it. When you don't know what you're doing wrong, or what you're doing wrong, it's very nuanced and complex, that becomes very, very difficult. The Rebbe asks, one second. Ulecheira hadavar any move on. This does not seem to make sense to us at all. Hare hagolos hanoichich is the present golos is known as galut Edom. Galut Edom. Edom is Esau. Well, the divrei admor hazaken. According to the Alter Rebbe, Shabiruri Shal Esav, that the refinement of Esav Nasa Tezman Kotzer should be happening. 1, 2, 3. Haisega, my Golos, Sichali is Ktsara. This Golos Edom should have been a short Golos, but it's anything but. And it's the Golos of Esau. And of course, the larger question is, it's exactly the opposite of what we just learned in Rashi, where we learned that Esau was the ultimate pig, ever concealing his true intentions. And here the Alter Rebbe says that Esav was open. So the Rebbe's answer is that there are two Esau's. There is the Esau as he was vis-a-vis his father Yitzchak. And then there's the Esau as he was towards Yaakov. There's Esau the son and Esau the sibling. Esau the son was a liar, a cheater, and a master of deception, cloaking himself in raiments of righteousness. So, but when it came to Yaakov, when it came to his sibling relationship, Esau didn't pull any punches. He never told Yaakov that he was a righteous person. He told Yaakov, I just made my first murder. Can you give me some soup? He was very open with him. That's how the story with the firstborn came. Esau murdered Nimrod and his people. And it was his first time he was in close quarters of murder. He killed somebody. He was a 15-year-old boy, by the way. Considered his first set of homicides. And he was drained by it. He was shocked by what he just did. And he didn't hide that from Yaakov. He said, Yaakov, I'm dying. I'm overwhelmed. Give me some porridge. Yaakov is not so fast. But he was very open with him. He didn't hide it. Yatzah connected with Muhammad Gluya. When Esau wanted to get Jacob, he said, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to cut your heart out. He was very open. Yaakov knew exactly what he was dealing with. He was able to deal with it very quickly. When it came to his relationship to Yitzchak, not only did Esav conceal his true intentions and his true activities, he did it even in a more deceptive way than Lavan did. This cheating, the deceit of Lavan was, he camouflaged the evil so Yaakov shouldn't see what his real intentions are, what he's trying to do. He never presented himself as Lavan the tzaddik. He just said, I'm Lavan the guy. I'm a guy. I'm doing stuff. How do you know? Well, maybe I'm not trying to harm you today. Maybe I'm not trying to steal from you. And Yaakov didn't even know which day when Lavan was being honest or dishonest. He didn't know which face he was wearing. But he never came along with a set of payas. He never came along saying, me, Lavan the tzaddik. He never played that game. Esav not only hid what he did from his father and mother, he even came home with a shtreimel. He even dressed up in the nines, dressed to the nines in what looked like righteous Hasidic garb. He came along and he made himself. The chazer doesn't just say, I'm not kosher. The chazer sticks his hooves in your face and he says, Ru'u shani tar. You see? Look at me. I got the hooves. I'm kosher. And now we can understand why this golos is lasting so long. Because Golos Edom is not the Edom, not the Esau who faced off with Yaakov. This is the Esau who faced off with Yitzchak. And kedei levaklas rama usishal esav, in order to get past that kind of deceit, yesh tzedek ba'avayda rabba, this is very difficult. This is exactly the time we're living in now. Would the anti-Semites claim not to be anti-Semites? Would the anti-Semites have different names for everything? And they claim to be speaking in the name of goodness. They are standing up for the beleaguered Palestinians, quote unquote. We are the good people. It's the Israelis who are bad. It's the Jews who are doing terrible things. We're the good people. And tragically, so many young Jews get swept up in this fervor. This is the ultimate deception. This is Esau. This is the pig. This is the Hogwarts. This is the worst of the worst. This is the hardest to be able to nullify. This is not Lavan. This is the difficulty of Esau, which makes for a very, very serious challenge and has made for a long, long gullus that hopefully is finally, very soon, going to come to its end with the coming of Mashiach. B'mheira u'b'yameinu.